sometimes just adding more people decreases the efficiency of the company. It creates more approval chains, more managerial layers. Now with AI, you can kind of like break that equation and turn it on its head.
Building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work.
Hello and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. Today's conversation is about growth, like many of our conversations are, but it's a different perspective on growth. For a long time, growth meant headcount and managers and layers and Slack channels and emails. And if you were scaling, you were always hiring. And if you weren't hiring, people wondered if you were really growing. But our guest today started to wonder if that entire model is actually outdated. Today's guest, Amos Bar-Joseph, is the co-founder and CEO of a company called Swan AI, and he is building around the idea that scale shouldn't actually require headcount. So Swan's vision is to create what he calls an autonomous business operating system that is designed to reach $10 million in revenue per employee. And he's not doing that by replacing humans, but by embedding intelligence directly into go-to-market workflows. And yes, we are going to get into what exactly all of that means during our conversation. No, our conversation isn't just about AI. I know we've been talking about AI on this podcast a lot lately, and frankly, a lot of conversations are about AI. I want to keep it interesting. So our conversation is about AI and leadership, about ego, about systems, and what ambition in your career looks like when growth doesn't depend on building a machine out of humans. I thought this conversation was very interesting, and I hope that you do too. Hey, Amos, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So talk to me a little bit about what you're doing. I think we were talking a little bit before this that for decades, scale meant hiring and bigger teams meant bigger companies, but you are kind of doing the opposite of that. And your goal is $10 million in revenue per employee. Where did you even come up with that? Tell me the background.
Today, I'm the CEO and co-founder of Swan, and it's not my first company. Actually, I've built and scaled to B2B businesses before. Startups based on the old unicorn growth at all model cost. And basically, what happened in that model and in these companies is that you raised a big round before you even know who you're selling to and what you're selling to. And then you grow to 30 and 40 people just as a status symbol before you got to even your first $1 million in revenue. And then from there on, every round becomes a mission to grow your total vision and total addressable market and less about the real metrics of the business. And sooner or later, you realize that you've built a company on a very sick foundation, and it's very hard to maneuver and innovate and adapt because there's so much bloat and so much headcount that is not really necessary for the actual growth of the company. And when I came to build Swan, my third company, together with this notion of AI agents that is coming here to our world, I realized that it's time to reinvent the playbook of how do you scale a company from 0 to 1, from 1 to 10 and onwards. And that's how we landed on the autonomous business model. And we're building Swan as the first autonomous business, a business that could scale with intelligence, not with headcount. And we're focusing, as you mentioned, on revenue per employee, trying to get to $10 million ARR per employee rather than valuation. So it's not about valuation inflation. It's about leverage creation.
I think that, and I've seen this in some of the companies that we work with too. Sometimes instead of improving processes, leaders throw people at a problem. Why do you think they do that?
Yeah, I feel like people have this misconception that if you have a scaling problem and you throw bodies at it, it will just, you know, create less work for you as the manager and more efficiency to the company. And both of these notions are false, basically. Mm-hmm. So I think that good managers understand that when they add more people to the team, it means that they're adding more work on their plate, not less. And also that sometimes just adding more people decreases the efficiency of the company, creates bureaucracies, it creates more approval chains, more managerial layers. And we've got used to the fact that as the company grows, you get this diminishing returns on employees. It kind of gets slower and slower and slower, right? And now with AI, you can kind of like break that equation and turn it on its head. So a company could scale faster and faster the more it adds employees if it does that the right way. How we're doing it at Swan, which is kind of like radically different than the old model, we call the old model like cog culture, where you add people to scale the business and not basically you don't care about who they are, what they're good at. There's like a job description. This is the box. This is where you should live. This is what you should do. And your goal is to scale the business. But in an autonomous business, what we're doing is that we're flipping that and we're saying the business goal is to scale its employees. The way that it will do that is by using AI and processes and organizational structure to take each employee and push them as much as we can into their zone of genius, that area mm-hmm. where their passion and skills intersect to create disproportionate value to the company. And that's how we kind of like turn that equation so every employee that joins adds more and more value and it compounds.
So my next question was going to be about the concept of cog culture. So you are definitely anticipating what I'm thinking about. On the topic of more people equals taking more time, my career started at a great company, GE, and it would take even 3 to 4 weeks just to get a quote approved for selling something. And it's like, wait, what? Why would it take so long to do something like that? And, you know, that was way before AI, and it is a fantastic, very successful company, but it could take so much less time with the right processes and the right optimizations. Why do you think on the cog culture topic that companies still value like motion or busyness over like thinking and process optimization?
Yeah, so first of all, people are afraid of change. And mm-hmm. the bigger the organization, the more you see the concept of change management appears, right? You need to manage the change. Because you're so reluctant to it, you need people who are managing that, right? So I think that's just one aspect that is just positioning big enterprises in a very weak position towards this AI revolution that is really disrupting how we think about scale and how we think about, you know, organizational structure. And the second reason why I think it's happening is because people don't really understand AI yet. And I think that the reason why they don't understand AI is because they think it's complicated. It's because they think it's this something almighty that is intimidating and going to replace them. And they're not looking at it just as another tool, basically. And I think that the teams that are winning with AI are not the smartest. They are not, large language model engineers or machine learning scientists. Those are not the teams that are winning with AI. The teams that are winning with AI are basically the folks who roll up their sleeves and said, I'm going to get at it. I'm going to build something with it. I'm not afraid. I'm just going to work with it. And that's like 90% of the work. And the bigger the organization, the bigger this conception of there's like a black swan here that is approaching us. It's called AI, and we need to prepare for it, right? Instead of just, okay, there's something new here. Let's just play with it.
It seems like the kind of person that's successful in a normal business and the kind of person that's successful in a company like Swan might be different. Like, for example, when you're successful in a normal business, you become a manager of people. But when you're successful in the business that you're building, you become a manager of processes, of optimization, of AI agents. Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think that the fundamentals are the same. And I think that's part of that misconception that people think that everything is changing and everything is turning underneath them. But the fundamentals are the same. When you work in an autonomous business, so an autonomous business is a flat organization. You're not managing people. It's true. It feels like it's radically different. But if we go back here for a second for your example of, you know, if you're good at an enterprise, you become a manager, right? But what separates good managers from bad managers, in my opinion, the more the manager can understand processes, systems, and best practices, and can combine this knowledge to pursue a goal and to the right, to kind of like lay the puzzle in the right direction to pursue that goal, that's all really it takes to become a great manager in an organization. And you see these managers that are not really in the weeds. They don't know anything about the real processes, the systems, the best practices, and they just give directions from above, and things are crumbling underneath them. Everybody's like talking behind their back because they don't know anything about the instructions that they give. This thing just amplifies 10x in an autonomous business because instead of managing employees, you're managing AI agents, basically. But the work looks very similar. So you have a goal for me. I need to generate pipeline, for example. Okay. And to do that, I write content on LinkedIn. And so if I was a manager, I had a LinkedIn content team maybe that would be writing these posts for me, right? And then another team that will be taking the engagement of these posts and monitoring them and helping me generate pipeline out of the folks that are engaging with my content. And the difference is that I can just now tell an agent to help, you know, write that content. And that agent can write that content, and then I can tell it to push it to LinkedIn. And then I have another agent that can monitor that engagement on the post and then surface hot leads to me, and I can just review them, and sends outreach to them. So this is a very similar work, actually, to someone who's in charge of demand generation, but instead of managing teams, they're managing agents in that sense. But if I know the process that humans would do here, I will be able to specify exactly what the agent should do. If I didn't know the practice, then I would just tell the agent, go and write an amazing post and generate pipeline out of that. It wouldn't work. AI doesn't work like that. But if I know the processes, the systems where the data lives, and best practices, I can specify correctly to the team of agents what to do, and I can review the output because I know what good looks like, and then give feedback to improve. So basically, in an AI native world, we are all managers. And we are all managers that need to understand how to roll up our sleeves, get dirty sometimes, really understand what it takes to build and execute a process, and then be able to replicate that with agents instead of employees.
All right, y'all, it's shameless plug time. I want to take a quick break to chat with you about Excelity, my full service marketing agency. For the last 12 years, we've been working closely with B2B software and service companies. Now we are expanding and looking for growth stage companies with a bold vision, but maybe lacking the marketing strategy or resources to get there. Or hey, you might have resources that just aren't working out. We definitely see that all the time. At Excelity, our team gets results and we have a ton of fun doing it. I'm sure you can tell that from listening to this podcast. So if you or someone you know is a fit, check us out at excelitymarketing.com or reach out to me directly on LinkedIn.
Do you think that some of that could be a little bit of like an oversimplification of the skills that are required of a manager? Because I think that when you're a manager, especially managing people with human emotions, there is part of like, you know, like empathy required. You're coaching people, you're handling people and their lives and stuff like that. Like as a manager myself, I spend a good amount of time
talking to people and like developing soft skills. And like I, as the person who founded our business, obviously I understand a lot of what we do and the processes and stuff like that. So having those skills is super important. And I do think the more traditional manager has to have soft skills that you may not necessarily need or that you don't focus on in an autonomous business. What's your take on that?
Yeah, amazing. I love that. So empathy is different here. I agree. And when you're working with people, empathy is a skill that is required to understand what motivates them and help them achieve their goals by aligning their goals with yours. And it's definitely required. And that is something that is changing when you're working with AI agents, definitely. But on the other side of that, you talked about soft skills and that you're spending a lot of time coaching your employees, right? That is exactly what you do with AI. Not only that is exactly what you do with AI, it's called, from a technical standpoint, there's right now a best practice that people are starting to call it, all everybody the same. Developers, they call it skills. So when you work with an AI agent and you want to teach it something, then you create a skill. From a technical standpoint, it's actually called a skill. And that skill is kind of like an SOP or a best practice. And it's very similar to how you spend your time talking to someone, try to give it context, you know, about the bigger picture here, the organizational need, and then the smaller picture here about what are the best practices to follow that, you know, standard operating procedure or best practices, et cetera. And it's the same work with agents one-to-one. People think, and that's another misconception, is that, you know, AI is so smart and let the AI enter the process and it will do magic and it will just turn our business on its head. But I love to give this analogy. If you have the smartest person in the world and you add them to a team in GE, to a meeting, like a meeting prep, like a session in GE, and you ask them a question, right? Would they know how to answer something about like how do you manufacture something or how you should pursue this goal or anything? No, what they're lacking is context, is this coaching that you gave, is this SOPs, is all of that information. We call it context to simplify it. They won't be able to help you without all that context. And it's the same with AI agents. And so when what you call coaching employees, it's called context engineering in agents. It's just a complex term to say the same thing. We're just trying to give the AI the context to understand what to do based on any given situation and how to handle it.
Interesting. I think it's going to be a big shift for people just to, you know, like come to terms with the fact that you are working with an agent versus a person. And even if the skills are similar, it's just a different concept. So I think it's a fascinating way to think about it.
I agree. And I think it will be hard, but the key to unlock it is to understand that that's how I look at it. It is a machine. Yeah. Okay. It is a tool, but the skills that are required to use that tool are managerial skills.
Yeah.
That's the only analogy you should take. If you want to take it further, that they are like humans, well, you're welcome, but you don't need to. You can just think of it. This is like Salesforce. This is a tool, but instead of clicking on a keyboard and a mouse and just looking for the buttons, I just need to use my managerial skills to use that tool.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was thinking about our chat and thinking about, I guess, all of the tension that exists right now around like the fear of AI and the fear of job displacement and all of, you know, the companies that are blaming displacement on AI when it turns out that a lot of the displacement isn't even really happening, you know, because of AI, but they're finding that like a convenient excuse. You frame Swan around the term collaborative autonomy. Tell me a bit about that idea.
Amazing. Yeah. Jackie, you did your research.
Yeah.
So when I call this model the autonomous business model, I'm not talking solely about autonomous agents. I'm talking about the concept of autonomy, maximizing it, autonomy for employees and autonomy for agents. So the way to achieve leverage is not by reducing the amount of agency and autonomy you give your employees and your agents. It's about maximizing it, right? The more autonomy you give your employees, the more they could achieve on their own without all these approval layers and managerial layers and bureaucracies, etc. So the same concept applies to AI agents. And the way to mitigate these two concepts here is by thinking of it as collaborative autonomy. So you have your employees at the company and you're trying to maximize their autonomy, trying to maximize the amount of things that they can do on their own. And they have their own agents. Okay, every agent is attached to a human being. It's not like agents live in the wild and are doing things without any control or anything like that. Ownership at, you know, and accountability is a human employee thing. It still is. Nothing changed. Okay, but these tools now has autonomy for these employees, right? So they should think about their agents, but maximizing their autonomy, right? But it's not 0-1. Like I say, they can now going to do everything without my permission. Some things require approval. That's okay, right? What you're trying to create leverage by maximizing autonomy for your agents, but it's okay to have a human in the center to review the output and be at the most critical points. And so it's not, I'm not saying everything should be automated. I'm just saying this is like how we're, what we're looking at it. We're trying to maximize that under the constraint of not destroying our business and hurting our customers. We just, we want to deliver an amazing customer service and experience and product. That's the goal, didn't change in that sense. So how do we do that while creating the maximum leverage? We're maximizing autonomy, but we'll still, we need the human judgment here, and we need to understand that there's a goal to pursue, and that's what's most important.
What kind of moral or ethical responsibility do you think founders like you have when building autonomous or headcount light companies?
That's an amazing question. So I think as a founder, you always have three types of responsibilities, basically, to the market, to your employees, and to your shareholders, right? Again, nothing changed, right? And I feel like people are always trying to reinvent the wheel, everything. But basically, you have these three responsibilities. And I think from the market perspective, we're not building AI to build walls between us and our customers. We're using AI to build bridges, okay? And when we think about our customers, we think about how can we provide an amazing customer experience and customer service. And the first thing that we ask ourselves is not what AI could automate, that is building walls. The first thing that we ask ourselves is where is our resources most required? The human resources, where our customers need us. And it's in the commercial relationships. It's in the, you know, the most frustrating bugs out there that are repeatable and they feel like they want to talk to someone. It's in the outliers. That's where we think for us, contextually for Swan, that's where we realize that we want to be in the loop when we're talking with our customers. And then everything else, okay, that's where AI could do better job than us and deliver better experience for our customers. And then when we look at our employees, and we talked about it, the cult culture. I think, you know, the biggest responsibility for our employees is to enable them to enjoy the fruits of this revolution. We think that what this revolution is doing to the job employment market is a rearrangement of skills around people's zone of genius. If AI could take the junior work, like the mundane work, the things that are the simple things, and people could start flowing into their zone of genius where they contribute the most value to the company. And so what we're focusing on, and we feel like our ethical responsibility for our employees, is to make sure that we're using AI to scale them, not to scale the business. Because we know that eventually this will create the best model for a company to scale, right? It's not like we're just doing it out of generosity. We think that from a capitalist perspective, this will generate an undefeatable machine that will grow and grow and grow in the most efficient and sustainable way, only if it looks at scaling its own employees using AI. And then for our shareholders, eventually, we're not saying, look, we're going to build an autonomous business just because it's cool or it's more efficient or, you know, this is the best way to use AI eventually. What we're saying is autonomous business is the next model. This is a model that would have an unfair advantage against the traditional model. And so every company that is still following the traditional model, if you compare apples to apples against Swan, they would lose. Same product, same value proposition, they're the old model, they would lose. And so that's our responsibility for our shareholders to make sure that the model we're pursuing adheres to that.
Great answer. Thank you for going through that. Okay, we are nearing the end of our time. If everyone listening walks away with one takeaway, one thing that you want them to remember from this conversation, what is it?
That becoming an AI native business doesn't require any AI skills at all. And the only thing that it requires is rolling up your sleeves, looking inwards, not outwards, not looking for off-the-shelf solutions that could, you know, change your lives completely. Looking inwards, I give you a task for tomorrow, guys, if you're listening, okay? Just identify a process that is a repetitive and fairly simple process within your company. I map the process and the steps that it takes. Identify a bottleneck in that process and then try to improve that step or process with AI. That's it. Just try and bang your head around it until you make it work just by an inch better, by an inch. And it doesn't matter how, if it's 1 inch or 10 inch or 100, it's just the small improvement is all that matters to start building your AI muscle. AI muscle is something that you build, something that compounds, something that takes time. It's a new technology. No one knew how to work with it 2 years ago. You're like everybody else. You're in uncharted territory. Just start banging your head around it, and eventually you'll become an AI native company. That's how it goes.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. For everyone listening, please share this with one person that needs to hear this episode, and I'll talk to you next time.